Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Reynolds Journalism Institute in Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. Being an independent news reporter in Cuba is a dangerous occupation. The Committee to Protect Journalists reports that Cuba was once tied with China for holding the largest number of journalists behind bars. In 2003, dozens of journalists and dissidents were rounded up and sent to prison, some for as long as 27 years. But last March, Cuba released the last of these 29 journalists imprisoned during what's known as the Black Spring crackdown. No journalist has been sentenced to a lengthy prison term in the past year. The Catholic Church helped negotiate the releases, and next month, the Pope will visit Cuba. So, does this indicate that under Raul Castro, conditions for press freedoms and civil rights will improve? Our guest today will help us understand the state of the media on this island nation just 90 miles from the United States. Carlos Loria is a senior coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists. Loria is an Argentinian working in New York. He's responsible for monitoring, documenting, and developing responses to press freedom violations in Latin America. Gary Marks is an investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune. He was based in Havana before getting blacklisted by the Cuban government. Marks received the Inter-American Press Association Human Rights Award in 2004 for his coverage of Cuba's Black Spring. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thanks, David.
So, Gary,
David, how are you?
Hey. Gerald, you lived and worked in Cuba from about 2002 to 2007 when the Cuban government essentially took away your reporting credentials. Tell us a little bit about what it was like being a foreign correspondent inside Cuba.
Well, I think generally speaking, it was a very, very tough environment. I mean, you have to understand Cuba is a police state, and obviously there were you know less than a half dozen foreign correspondents who were based on the island, and you can pretty well assume that your offices are bugged, your employees are informants for the government. It's obviously a very, very opaque government. There's little access to any individuals at the top level simply because they're afraid of speaking to the foreign media. And as you can imagine, it's also difficult to build sources. And on-the-street interviews are also very, very precarious. People are willing to talk to you, but I would say probably 80 to 90% of what they tell you is probably not true. You know, they're just used to protecting their opinions keep it very, very close to the chest. And so it makes it incredibly difficult. You can pretty well assume that you're being watched and listened to most of the time you're out reporting.
And tell us about what happened during the Black Spring crackdown and what images still stand out in your memory about that?
Well, obviously, it was was on the eve of the Iraq War, and the Bush administration had cranked up sanctions against Cuba, and Fidel was responding very strongly. It was incredibly tense, and obviously, when they began rounding up the journalists and other activists over a week long period, it signaled a real shift, I think, And so it was a difficult time. Again, it was very hard to cover it simply because, like I said, you have very little access to the upper levels of the Cuban government. So you don't really know what they're thinking. That was obviously one of the questions was, why was the government doing it at this time? And was it because of the world was, focusing on Iraq? Was it because of the Bush administration tightening up the sanctions? Or was it just the fact that, they sort of had allowed this brief opening for independent journalists on the island? These, again, are Cubans who cannot publish on the island. These are individuals who publish outside the island. But did Fidel sort of think, well, this is getting a little out of hand. It's time to crack down on these people.
Right. And now that, Carlos, I know that the CPJ and other Catholic Church and others have been fighting to get these journalists released for a long time. And now that they've been freed, what are they saying about their confinements, and have any been able to return to the profession inside Cuba?
Right. Well, for them, being in jail for, more than 7 years, it was a nightmare. Cuban jails are really terrible. So they suffered from many different ailments, people who were sick before going to jail, their health conditions worsened. Many of them developed ailments for during their incarceration. There was subject psychological pressure, inhumane treatment. It was really, really bad. The food, they were given rotten food at times. It was really bad. Most of the journalists and many political prisoners that were released after the agreement between the Cuban government and the Catholic Church, by intermediation of the Spanish government, were sent to Spain. In fact, 18 journalists were among those who agreed to exchange their prison cells for enforced exile in Spain. For those journalists, obviously, the challenges have been significant. Spain has welcomed this hundreds of Cuban detainees and their families. Their economic woes and bureaucratic problems have made the transition very difficult. Several of them have since come to the United States. But they have struggled to go back to do their work as reporters. They have to survive. And just a few of them, the most prominent ones, perhaps, are back to doing their job as journalists.
Right. And who are some of these journalists inside Cuba who are risking their own freedoms to report on what's happening inside Cuba,
right.
Bloggers and regular journalists?
Yeah, so some of the people that were arrested during the crackdown were people that at some point embraced the Cuban Revolution, and were people that were very close to the Cuban, were working for the Cuban government, many of them. Jorge Olivera Castillo, for example, fought in Angola for the Cuban army, and he was released, in the first few years after the crackdown. But he still writes every day about many things that the Cuban official press chooses to ignore. So does, for example, Oscar Espinosa Chepe. He was also released on parole a year or year and a half after he was imprisoned. And he was a very respected economist working for the Cuban government, who at some time disagreed with some of the policies and was automatically considered a dissident. And he still writes in-depth analysis of Cuba's long economic troubles. Both him and whoever writes about Cuba are subject to harassment, and mm-hmm. obviously they have the threat of going back to jail. Among the new generation of independent journalists and bloggers, there's a vibrant community of independent blogging. Many of them writing journalistic pieces exploring important social and economic issues. Among them, one of the most prominent ones is Joanny Sanchez.
Right. Blogger.
Blogger has been named as one of Time's most influential people.
you know, wrote a letter to President Obama, and Obama decided to respond in a written questionnaire back in 2009. And she was subjected to a brutal beating in the middle of the street by plainclothes police in 2009. So, you know, these are some of the examples of people that, you know, are still doing work inside the island.
Right. And Gary, I know you keep up with what's going on, and you went back last year, right?
Yes.
But not as a journalist, but just to observe.
Yeah.
What do you think about these journalists who still manage to report from inside Cuba? Did you meet with any of them, or do you know of their work?
Well, let me just make a point. You know, Yoani Sanchez was named one of Time's most influential people, but she has no influence on the island at all. And this is a thing to remember. Cuba has the lowest penetration rate of internet access of any country in the Western Hemisphere. These individuals are writing for audiences in Spain, in the United States. They're writing for audiences outside Cuba. Cubans
okay.
have very little, if any, access to anything these individuals are writing, and that's something to be
right.
to be remembered here. You know, these are individuals; many of them are brave. And as Carlos said, you cross that line in Cuba, and it's a very bright line into dissent, whether it's political dissent or as an independent journalist, your life changes forever. And you can be imprisoned at any time. You can lose your job. Your kids cannot get access to school, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that's an important point to make. These independent journalists in Cuba are not writing for the Cuban audience. Cubans have very little idea who Yoani Sanchez is or any of these other independent journalists. In terms of what the situation is now, you know, when I got my press credentials pulled in 2007, told I couldn't report from Cuba again, you know, they made that point very clear to me. I went back with my family to visit. I did meet with foreign correspondents there. I did not meet with dissidents because obviously the Cuban government was aware of what I was up to there.
Right.
I was there just with my family visiting people. And so I wasn't there as a journalist. I didn't make that connection with any dissidents because I knew I'd probably be thrown out of the country. But I can say this. The conditions, I do not believe, have improved significantly inside Cuba. And I can tell you from my personal opinion and from my experience, you know, Fidel Castro, at least with foreign correspondents, he liked foreign correspondents. His power was power projected to the world, and he needed foreign correspondents there to publish his words and to publish his ideas overseas. I don't think Raul Castro cares at all about that. He cares only about what's happening inside the country. You know, he rarely speaks in public inside
right.
of Cuba, let alone project his ideas outside of Cuba. So for the foreign correspondents there, I can speak right now, they think it's worse now than it was under Fidel Castro.
Carlos, what was your opinion on that? Or what, do you see things the same way based on the reports you get from inside Cuba?
Definitely. And I think, touching on what Gary was saying about the bloggers, he made a very good point. I mean, you know, internet penetration in Cuba, according to statistics from the Minister of Information, Technology and Communications, say that it's nearly 13% of the island's population have access to the internet. So, and people inside the island say that that figure is considerably inflated. So,
right.
Cuba, you know, according to the field, has the lowest rate of internet access in the Americas. And most of this, the work of this blogger is almost unknown in Cuba, and it's known abroad. Although, you know, it's important the work they're doing because, you know, most of the things they do write about are things that are completely ignored by the
right.
Cuban official. In terms of the situation in Cuba, we think that apart from freeing the journalists who were imprisoned during the crackdown, there has been no significant changes. You know, government officials talk about political and economic reform, and they point to a plan that will introduce soon high-speed internet service to the island.
Yeah, how do you think that's going to – could that change – could that make a difference, particularly for
we don't think
social media?
No. The schedule of arrival of broadband is we don't think suspected to improve free expression or access to information for the majority of Cubans.
Why is that? What tactics does the government do to keep the people from getting it?
Yeah, there's economic, there's legal challenges for people to access to the internet. There's just people that are close to the government officials, some academics, some physicians. They do have access to the internet, but the Cuban government, does not offer widespread access to the internet. So I think the new fiber optic yeah. cable from Venezuela is gonna improve the infrastructure. We don't think that it's gonna extend connectivity to the general public.
Okay.
The internet access will still be something that will allow government officials and its legion of online bloggers to gain greater technological advance, but not to the general public.
Right. And so for the foreign correspondents who are in Cuba, do they have to self-censor in order to keep their press credentials from being taken away by the government? I guess Gary first and Carlos?
Well, David, I would just say it's a very complicated issue. I mean, nobody ever told me what to write or what not to write. I mean, obviously, as I mentioned, the Cuban government was probably well aware of everything I was working on because I presume my offices were bugged and I was followed. And like I said, your employees in the foreign bureaus are you have to hire them from a Cuban government agency, and they have to be informants in order to basically take
right.
those jobs. So. Self-censorship is not probably the right word. I mean, I wrote whatever I felt like I had to write, but the Cuban government obviously puts tremendous pressure on you. You know, I remember after writing my first story in 2002, I was called into the foreign ministry, and they had my story there, and I met in a room with officials, and they basically said, if you keep writing stuff like this, you're not going to be on the island very long. And so there's constant sort of pressure in that sense. And I was isolated very early on when they figured out I was not there, sort of as being sympathetic to the revolution, but trying to do my job as an objective journalist and was writing critical stuff about human rights and other things. They kind of isolated me very quickly. It was very hard to get interviews with government officials. And so on. But that didn't stop me from writing. They never stopped me from sending a story that I wanted to send. And I was able to write what I wanted. But the pressure is great. It is incredibly great, especially those foreign correspondents who've been on the island for years, are married to Cubans and have kids there. Those guys, those reporters are leveraged by the Cuban government. These are individuals who want to stay on the island, and if they write stuff or broadcast stuff that's too critical, they'll be gone, just like Mauricio Vincent, the fantastic correspondent from El País who lost his press credentials, I think it was last year.
Right, right. Carlos, you want to add anything to that?
Sure, yeah. I mean, the Cuban government has a record of pulling press credentials of international correspondents, like, what happened to Gary, what happened to Mauricio Vicente in September of 2011, 20-year-old veteran writing for El País and Cadena Ser, a radio network, who, as Gary, was often critical. Was probably obviously not told what to write, but they know, and Gary can give evidence of this. They walk a very fine line. I mean, recently the government has retaliated in other ways against international media. For example, the state television provider stopped offering CNN en Español on the service available in hotels and international business offices. In April of 2011, the state television program accused a veteran seasoned Reuters correspondent of arranging a meeting between an undercover Cuban agent and a U.S. diplomat whom it claimed was a CIA operative.
Right.
Obviously, Reuters categorically denied the accusations. So, I mean, it's a very complicated balance.
And David, let me make one other point as well.
Okay.
I mean, on the one hand, we were on the island, and of course, we were being watched, and the pressure from the Cuban government was there. But foreign correspondents who fly in, you got to understand, they got to go to the Cuban interest section in Washington. They have to present a list of stories they're going to do. And I can almost tell you the stories that the Cuban government's going to allow. Whenever you see a foreign correspondent go in there from outside, they're going to do a story about old cars. You're going to do a story about rum, the Cuban, and if you don't follow that, if you go out and do a story about human rights or something like that, they're not going to give you another visa.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get in for a year or two. So that's another thing for listeners and readers to understand. When somebody flies out from ABC News or something to go to Havana, they are giving a story list that the Cuban government approves beforehand. And if they deviate, that correspondent is not going to get in for a long time.
Okay. I want to talk a bit about ways that pressure is being put on Cuba to reform. But first, I want to, before we continue this discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You also can find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to today's program on our website. So please send us comments or questions to globaljournalist@kbia.org or on our Facebook page. So I wanted to – I got this story about this first national conference of Cuba's Communist Party and Raul Castro's speech. He urged party members to become more democratic and openly debate Cuba's problems. And he said Cuba's state-controlled media need to report on the debate responsibly and truthfully. What do you think about his comments as far as what's really happening and kind of the coverage of this national conference?
You know, I think this has sort of been one of Raul's things. I mean, I think Raul believes in a one-party state, and he believes in government control of the media. I think you have to – those are sort of the two parameters you have to understand. Now, within that, there can be certain coverage and certain debate of issues. I mean, I think one thing, when I was there in 07, you know, just before I was thrown out of Cuba, you know, Raul had taken over for Fidel, and you began seeing articles that sort of talked about the kind of petty corruption that is pervasive inside Cuba. But it's all controlled criticism. It's all controlled by the government. So I think within the parameters of a one-party sort of police state, you can say, yes, Raul is allowing that kind of criticism. It's the same thing Fidel used to do. You know, Fidel used to get on TV and talk for 3 hours and sort of echo the complaints of the average citizen. Well, you know, there's not enough food, and your salaries are not high enough, and I understand this. But there wasn't real debate. There wasn't real criticism. There wasn't anybody saying, you know, listen, the problem here is, you know, it's a socialist state and a one-party state, and we have a socialist economy that doesn't work. You know, nobody is saying that and you know, under Fidel, and nobody's going to be allowed to say that under Raul.
Right.
Yeah, well, I would like to – I totally agree with Gary, and I would like to add something on the state of repression now in Cuba. And, you know, we took, for example, for a report we did and we put out in July – you know, what happens during, you know, periods where, you know, these political events take place. And we examine, you know, for example, the meeting of the Communist Party Congress in April of last year and the anniversary of the March crackdown. And we found that in that period, journalists were targeted in more than 50 instances of repression.
Right.
The majority of cases involved arrests by state security, and also, you know, they were detained on the way to cover the party congress or held in local police stations for hours or days.
Okay. We have just about a minute and a half left, and I wanted to talk about the influence of the Catholic Church and what you know, the Church did play a role in the government's decision to release the Black Spring prisoners, and also, you know, CPJ and other groups helped as well. But what do you think, Carlos, and then Gary, will be the impact of the Pope's visit to Cuba in March?
Well, I think that the Catholic Church played an important role in this agreement with the Cuban government and by with mediation of the Spanish Spanish government. So it was key for the release of most of the dissidents arrested during the crackdown and hundreds of other political prisoners. I'm not sure about the impact of the Pope's visit in terms of what will mean for reporters and
right.
independent press. I don't think it will have a huge impact on them. And coverage for independent reporters will be again very difficult. And those who try to do it independently. Right. Will suffer the consequences.
Okay, and Gary, we have about a few seconds left. What do you think?
Just very briefly, the Catholic Church, conservative organization, they will do what they can, but they will not threaten their own interests by confronting the Cuban government.
Great.
That's their stance, what it's been, and it will continue to be that.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a fascinating conversation about that I'm sure our listeners and viewers appreciated. Carlos and Gary, thank you again. Global Journalist is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungekar is our executive producer, with lead production by Camille Phillips. Now, stay tuned for Free Press Watch, and join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.
And now, Free Press Watch, a segment on Global Journalist where each week we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Lainey Mullen. Today's news comes from Al Jazeera, the AP, the BBC, the Committee to Protect Journalists, Reporters Without Borders, and our own reporter, Nin Pham. According to the Press Freedom Index released January 25th, Syria is now deemed the fourth worst country in the world for press freedom. This came 2 weeks after the killing of a prominent French journalist in Homs. Since uprisings began in March 2011, Syrian journalists have experienced disappearances, detainments, and killings. The Arab League announced January 28 that it would suspend its monitoring mission in the country. On January 24, supporters of press freedom took to the streets of Colombo, Sri Lanka. The Black January protest opposed attacks on journalists and media institutions, including a January 2009 killing and a January 2010 disappearance. Protesters held placards with statements such as, "Attackers of media are out free, and government is silent." On January 28 in Somalia, the director of Shabelle Media Network was shot and killed in front of his home. Colleagues said they believed Hassan Osman Abdi was killed by Al-Shabaab, an Islamist militant group that opposes Somalia's transitional federal government. Abdi is the third director of the network to be slain since 2007. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week on Global Journalist. I'm Lainey Mullen. See you next week.